Coach, defense is important, but a team also has to score to win. You can have the best defense in the world, but without an offense to match, you won't be winning any championships. Just have a look at what happened during March Madness this year. Three out of four teams that made it to the Final Four on both the women's and men's side were the top three offensive-ranked teams. That's no coincidence. The reality is most coaches will win more games with a 15% improvement on offense. But how? We're bringing in one of the greatest offensive minds in the game and Read and React creator, Coach Rick Torbett, to help answer that question. On May 9th, Rick and I will kick off our four-week offensive strategies track where we will teach coaches how to score 7 to 10 more points per game. Just head to pgccoaching.com/tracks to learn more.
Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, TJ and Sam discuss pack line defense with head coach Jim Boone. Coach Boone has almost 40 seasons of head coaching experience with over 600 wins. His expertise has been in rebuilding programs, creating a winning culture, and teaching and implementing the pack line defense. In this episode, he shares about all three. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle. We got a legend on with us today, Jim Boone. You heard his bio, over 600 wins, taking multiple team to national tournament appearances, had success at every job he's ever been at. Jim, thanks so much for being on with us today.
Thank you, guys. It's an absolute honor to be here. You know, I enjoy listening to you often, and to be a part of your broadcast is special for me. So thank you.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot to talk about today. I think if you haven't followed him, you need to follow him on social media. Packline defense, he's become legendary at teaching that. Tough, stingy defensive teams. Also, if you follow him, you know he's a master on the grill. He can cook. I mean, he's the man of many different trades here. So, Coach, first of all, let's just jump in and talk in general. You know, you've been able to build success wherever you go. And I mean, coaches always want to know what the secret sauce is. Curious as to what you think you do really well that has allowed you to have success in so many places.
Man, that's a great question. You know, I'm not that guy that, you know, played at North Carolina or Duke or, you know, Kentucky. So I, you know, I've kind of had to make my own way. And so consequently, I've had to take a lot of jobs that nobody else wanted. You know, they weren't good jobs. Even the first job I took, it was open so late that they had two or three really good candidates for the position, but they all dropped out. And I kind of got it by default at California University of Pennsylvania. So I've never been big into being the first or second choice as long as I ended up being the choice. So, but the point being is that we've always been in a rebuilding situation. We've always been in a situation where it's been a losing program and we had to go in and fix it. So, you know, I just think I don't know if there's any one thing that you can pinpoint, but I do think there are some common denominators in each one. As you guys well know and talk about all the time, and it's not probably talked about enough, as relationships are the key. And you've got to have great relationships with your players. We've always been a staff that has tried to create a family atmosphere. I know everybody talks about it, and you know, I'm sure we have our shortcomings as well. But I just think it's so important that your guys know how much you care about them. And what's the old saying? That doesn't matter how much you know until they know how much you care. And they've got to know that. So however that works for you best. For me, it's opening my home to our guys. You know, I want our guys to be at my house. I want them to be a part of my family. I want them not to just know where, you know, the bathrooms are and the TV is. I want them to know the refrigerator, the silverware, what cabinet we keep the glasses in, and, you know, be able to walk outside and know about the smoker and the grill and what we're doing with that. So I want them to feel like they're at home. And I think that's been a big part of everywhere we've been. We've been able to get that across to our guys, and we've been able to create that. And then, of course, it's culture. And, the big buzzword that everybody uses all the time. But back in the day, we called it our program philosophy. But it was, it was the same thing. It was creating a culture. And you do that with people. It's not about signs and slogans. It's about people. So it's about the people you recruit. It's about the people you inherit. And anytime that I've walked into a program, good or bad, I've always kind of taken the John Gordon approach and said, hey, everybody's invited on the bus, man. We want all of you guys. We want everybody to stay. You're ours now. I don't like it when somebody says, when we get our people. When I walk on campus, these guys were here before I was here. They are our people. We're a part of them. Now, as you start the journey, there are going to be some guys that don't want to be on that bus, and they're going to ask to get off, and that's fine. You let them go their way, and you recruit guys in that are going to fit you. I think that one of the biggest things that stood out to me that I learned when I went to Robert Morris after Cal PA, we inherited a really tough situation there, a program that hadn't been very successful and a really good league at the time in a Northeast Conference. We had always played differently defensively, and I'm rambling here a little bit to get to a point, but we'd always been an up the line, on the line, fight you for every inch of the court, deny everything, switch, one through three and four and five. And we took that job, and there's no way we could not play that way in that league and have any opportunity to be successful. I think sometimes when I look back at it, maybe we were successful at Cal in spite of what we were doing X's and O's wise. We maybe could have helped our guys a little bit better. But we made the choice to go to PAC, and I went out and visited with Coach Bennett, Coach Dick Bennett, and his staff at Wisconsin, and literally spent a Thursday through a Sunday with them, watching practice and talking to their staff. And Coach Bennett made a comment then to me that has resonated throughout my entire career. When you take over a job, you need to recruit players you can lose with first. And guys hear that and they're like, what? And you say, well, let it soak in for a second. Guys that you can lose with first, that are going to stay committed to you through the adversity you're going to face. Because as we know, when you take over a rebuilding situation, there's a reason you're there. There's something wrong. You're not going to immediately be successful. There are going to be some bumps in the road. There are going to be some storms that you're going to have to weather. And to be able to get through those challenges, you need guys who are going to stay true to your culture and true to you. And so that's been a really big part of what we've done, TJ and Sam, to answer that question, is we've really tried to get guys who are going to fit us, stay true to us, even when times get tough, they're going to be there. And again, just like I started this with, I think it's extremely important that they know you're there for them too when times are tough for them.
So when you – I love that opening thought, by the way. So when you do take over the program, let's get into some of the meat of it. And there's going to be possibly some friction. You're having them over the house. You're building relationships. You're doing all those things that matter a lot. Then you get on court, and their habits, their work ethic, their leadership, their togetherness is not where you want it to be. And there's naturally going to be some challenge and some friction there. So talk to us a little bit about that process of changing the on-court habits that are needed. And when the friction hits, like, how do you handle that as a coach and a leader?
Let's see, that's the $64,000 question right there, to go back and date myself. The challenge today is so much different than the challenge that we had yesterday. Yesterday, you tell the young man that you want him to run through the wall, and it's like, when and how fast, and I'm ready to go, it's like if you had a guy that called his parents. I can remember one of my former assistants who played for me was telling me a story. He said, Coach, you know, that first year I called my dad and said, man, I'm leaving. And this was back in 1987. I'm leaving. I can't stay here. I don't fit this guy. And he said, son, you're staying right there. And it's up to you to figure out how to work it out with the coach. Well, as we know, that's not the way it is today. You know, kids are different. And I think one of the biggest reasons it's so different is because all the people that are around them, you know, parents, AAU coaches, high school coaches, advisors, friends. And so I think it's imperative that we as coaches, Sam, you talk about the friction. I think the first thing is that we have to get those people to understand, and I hate this word, but it's today, and it's a great word for today. We have to get them all to buy in. They've got to understand this is, and that's the number one thing, is just being straightforward. This is who we are. These are our expectations. These are our standards that we'll have for our team. And we want you to be a part of that. There's going to be some difficult times. There's going to be some times you don't like me, and maybe sometimes I don't like you, but we still have to love each other. And there's a difference in those two. We have to respect each other. And so I think it's important that we get those other people on board. You know, all the people I just mentioned that are part of this deal with this young man. They have to understand this is our culture, and that they're willing and eager to allow this young man to go through some difficult times as part of the growing process. That's hard to find. You know, there's not as many guys that want to do that and jump on board. Everybody wants to see success right now. And sometimes it takes a little bit of time. So I, as a coach, I've got to do a great job of painting that picture. You know, this is what it's going to look like. This is who we're going to be. This is where we're going. And you're a huge part of this process. I don't know if that, and then, you know, when things happen, I think it's education. It's being able to sit down and say, hey, you know, what you did today, that's intolerable. That can't happen. That's a non-negotiable. That's not who we're going to be in our program. Sometimes it might mean taking basketball away for a few days. That's part of it too. That's kind of a last resort for us. You know, I've always resorted to, you know, exercise opportunities and things of that nature. So, it's a process though. And I think the one thing we've learned in today's world is that as coaches, as leaders, we have to be flexible. We can't be as rigid as we were, you know, 25 years ago. You know, I can remember my coach, you know, I'll tell you a better story. I was on campus, and there's a guy on campus here who went to UNC and, was a very big part of Dean Smith and the Chapel Hill program. And he had all this history and practices he was reiterating to me, which was fascinating for me. I love hearing about that kind of stuff. And he was telling about a story when Coach Smith was trying to build toughness in his team. And he had a kid run till he puked. And then he had to bring garbage cans out and put them in each corner. And, you know, basically just ran him till he couldn't do anything else. And you obviously, that's very difficult thing. You can't do that today. We had to be a lot more flexible today. I think where we expected them to meet us where we were at 25 years ago, now it's imperative that we meet them halfway, at least, if not further.
Yeah, I love that. And great framing, exercising opportunities. I'm going to have to start using that one. I like that a lot. Let's talk pack line defense for a second. So, you know, a lot was made. I think Tony Bennett was winning a bunch of games in the NCAA, and then all of a sudden they're a first-round exit, and everyone's jumping on it.
Yeah.
Can't play that. Will play, right? And then they turn around and they win a national championship. And so you hear a lot of debate. I want to know why you landed on Pac-Line and why you believe in it so much.
Well, we kind of hit on it in the beginning of this episode. As I was moving from Cal PA to Robert Morris and understood I just didn't have the talent level that I felt I needed to play the way that we had been playing there, that we were going to have to change that. And I know this, the pack line, it's the great equalizer. It will give you an opportunity to compete against teams and players that are conceivably better than your team, better than your players. It allows you to stay in the game and give yourself a chance. Now, that's one of the fallacies of the pack line approach, is that sometimes maybe you allow teams that are inferior to you to stay in the game. I don't necessarily agree with that. I understand that can be part of it. I can get to that later. But as a builder, as someone who was kind of making their way, turning programs around, the one common denominator was that they were losing. And when you're losing, there are usually some things X's and O's wise that really stand out. You know, not getting back on defense, giving up second shots, allowing the ball to get the paint easily, fouling too much, giving up wide open threes. Those are things that cause you to lose. Offensively, taking bad shots and turning the basketball over. So I kind of we kind of came up with, okay, if we're taking over these programs, what are the things that we have to do to be successful? We've got to take care of the basketball. I love Coach Bennett's term, and we've used it ever since, sureness. You know, we want to be sure with the ball. We don't want to put it at risk. We want to select an offense that is going to complement our defense, and it's going to be, and I'll talk about that momentarily, it's going to be sure with the basketball. Secondly, we want to make sure that we are emphasizing that we are demanding that we take great shots. I don't think there's anything that beats you faster than taking bad shots. Certainly there's analytics behind that that you can use as proof in the pudding today with your players and film to show them what those kind of shots equate to. But we want to take great shots. And then we want to be a really tough defensive team. So what do we have to do to be tough defensively? What's beating us when we're taking over these programs where maybe we're dealing with a little lesser talent level? They're common denominators. You know, it's a lack of pressure on the ball because you're just not capable. It's the ball getting to paint easily and creating opportunities, whether it's kickouts for open shots or dump downs, or it's getting to the rim and scoring. Not getting back on defense is a big factor in becoming immediately better and competitive. Not giving up second shots. And sometimes I thought those second shots occurred because we were forcing the ball baseline. We were rotating across the baseline to help. And so therefore we lost the presence of our guards out front. They had to rotate down. And when they rotate down, you've got your 5'11", 6 foot guy trying to block out 6'7", 6'8". He's lost that battle before it started. So when we start seeing all those things happen and then visiting with Coach Bennett and putting in the pack, I really liked it conceptually. I'd always been the guy that personality-wise, I wanted to dictate the game defensively. And in some ways, you're not doing that with the pack. You really are, but you're not doing it as demonstratively as you would have been if you were out there pressuring. And so I had to kind of come to grips with that. I wasn't a very good teacher of the pack. My teams at Robert Morris didn't become good until probably our fourth year there. And then that's when we really became a very good defensive team in our league. But seeing that and seeing where we were and what we took over and how we progressed to become a very good defensive program totally sold me. And so we've been running it now. This will be our 28th year of running pack line defense. We've tweaked it. We've gotten a little bit better with it in some different areas, I think. And obviously there are some challenges out there in today's game that we didn't have 20 years ago, the ball screen and finding better ways to defend it. So that's kind of a long-winded answer, but that's why we have been so sold on it.
All right, so Coach, look, you said something I want to – you said two things I want to highlight, and let's talk about one of them. One, going back to earlier, you talked about not just getting players to buy in in today's game and today's players, you have to get the people around them to buy in, which I think is so important. And I just want to highlight that for the coaches and leaders that are listening to this, is like, you got to be creative as a leader. I think that's what you were saying. You can't just say, do what I say because I said it. Now you got to be a little more creative as a coach in today's game. So there's an importance there in like being creative and adaptable and evolving while staying true to some of those tried and true principles of yesterday. You know, grandma's wisdom is wisdom for a reason. And, you know, it's worked over time, right? And so I just wanted to highlight that. And then the second thing is great shots. I know you emphasize this. You've spoken at our PGC coaching clinics, and I've heard you talk about this, because I think you can do pizza parties and bowling and dinner at the coach's house and do skull sessions with your team. But if you as a coach allow your players to take bad shots, that'll kill culture really quick, because it deteriorates the team and the togetherness. So how are you teaching, you know, shot selection with your team? Maybe you can just give us some more tangible stuff there.
Well, again, first of all, amen. You're 100% correct with culture and bad shots and really tearing the fabric of your team and its unity apart. It starts with role development. Guys have to understand what their role is. They have to accept that role, and then they've got to be able to excel in that role in terms of playing to it, whatever that role is. For me, that becomes extremely important as a leader to stress the importance of all roles, because every role is of critical importance to the team. You know, if you're a football coach, it's a lot easier to do that. You're a quarterback, you're a running back, you're a lineman, you're a defensive lineman, right? So it's very spelled out. Basketball, we're blended. You know, we've got so many gray areas in terms of what guys can do. So the first thing with roles is establishing and teaching through education. This is what we need from you. This is why. And I think film has been a great teacher for us along the way. Again, I think it's small doses of film. And it's not just maybe film of our team, but maybe, okay, here's a couple NBA guys, and this is what is really a good shot for this team. Now look what this shot led to. Because that resonates with young men today when they watch the NBA game. So then in practice, and it's just, we try to do things to educate them. Okay, this is a great shot for you, but this is not for your teammate, because basketball is not an equal opportunity game. We all do things differently well. And we want to build upon and maximize your abilities and stay away from your strengths and stay away from your weaknesses. So, okay, this is a great shot for John, but Tommy, this is not a good shot for you. Then it's through practice. Okay, you get in practice and you can knock that shot down. Okay, Tommy, that wasn't a good shot for you. Okay, well, now you've proven that you can take that shot. So we let you start taking that shot. I hear about confidence in shooters all the time, and I'm a big believer and always have been, you know, the Coach Knight, that confidence comes from demonstrated abilities. I want our guys to have confidence that this is a good shot for you, no matter whether the ball goes in the basket or not. If we have predetermined through our practice and our work that this is a great shot for you, then I want you taking that shot. And if it means you missed nine times, I want you taking number 10. I think that builds confidence, but it does because of what you have demonstrated through your work and achievement in practice. And then I think you got to be very specific. We've used numbering system I got from Coach Meyer, Don Meyer, that I use it a lot with our teams now to evaluate a practice and show it to them, you know, a four being a layup or inside shot, a three being a great shot by that shooter in that specific area and time and score and all the things that go into shot selection, a two being a bad shot, you know, maybe a a shot necessary by one of your better scorers or better shooters in late clock, a one being an awful shot, and a zero if you want to put ball handling into it as a turnover. And then you can add up each one of your players and give them a statistical analytical ranking of this is where you fall with your shot selection decision making. That's been helpful. I think anytime you can show players something on paper that they can see and then validate it with film, they get it. They know. And that's the biggest parts of what we do. It's just through education and developing it in practice.
Coach, I loved your reasons for Pac-Line. Curious, would you run Pac-Line with any team or would it change on personnel?
I love that you asked me that. And I ask, I'm not trying to name drop here by any imagination, but something that we don't do enough of today that you guys do some of, but we as coaches and young coaches, I don't think do enough is go work camps. And, you know, those camps that lasted 5 and 6 days don't really exist any longer. And back in the day when I first started, that's what you did. And I can distinctly remember going to Cal PA's campus when I was not the coach there and working the Metro Index basketball camp, which was a scouting camp, much like Five Star, that was right outside of Pittsburgh. And my roommate was a high school coach from Rochester, New York, named Jeff Van Gundy. And so I had the opportunity to spend a week with Jeff, which was amazing because all we did was talk basketball 24/7. And we stayed in touch through the years. And then when I was at Eastern Michigan, I went to hear Rick Majerus speak at the Mohegan Sun. Big Rick Majerus fan, big, just loved how he taught the game. And I wanted to hear him speak. And so I went and somebody taps me on the shoulder, make a long story short, it was Jeff, who was coaching with the Knicks then, had came to hear Coach Majerus speak. And so we went to lunch and I asked him that question. Why do you play PAC with the Knicks? You've got the best athletes in the world. And he looked at me and said, so do they. And just think how much better we are running PAC, a PAC-like defense with this type of athleticism and length to protect the lane. And so, obviously, I agree with that 100%, and I would run pack line regardless of the level of talent that I have. And again, in today's game with the shot clock, and, you know, most high schools are going to it as well now, I think that is a major, major advantage for pack line defense.
Regarding the pack and how you defend ball screens, with today's skill level and the skill level of today's players so high off the ball and shooting, anything you're doing differently today against ball screens you didn't do 10 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, our ball screen defense has evolved over the years. And it's hard. And I think every team can be a little bit different. The things that have stayed the same for us is – I feel like it's really important to take the ball out of the equation, to not let the ball beat us. You know, we don't want the ball to get into paint. We don't want the ball to get where it can create opportunities for others or for the ball handler. There's so many really good guards in today's game that have the ability to create for both themselves and others off the ball screen. But what we're all trying to do is eliminate as many rotations as possible. I don't like the switch. Switching sometimes is really good. And we have had teams that we've been able to switch 1 through 4. So when it's a 4-man ball screen, we can do that. You know, I'll have a challenge this year. I'll have a 5'8 point guard, you know, and I really don't want him switching onto, you know, a 6'4, 6'5 player that can hurt him, shoot over him. So it depends upon your personnel some in terms of the switching component of it. So what we've tried to do is, and the biggest change we've probably tried to make it, we used to always play big support big, kind of a Rick Majerus-ism, and we've went away from that really totally in our ball screen defense where we're still going to go hard show, hard hedge, you know, momentary trap, whatever different folks call it, on side ball screens. But now we try to do a much better job with our low man and getting the and different guys, you know, some guys call that the MIG or whatever. We call it the low man. And that's just the lowest guy in the lane. He needs to be all the way to the lane line that the ball screen is occurring on. And so that if there is a good pick and pop guy, then we'll rotate with him and deal with that momentary switch until we can get guys reorganized. In the middle, we're either going to go level and, again, try to take the ball out of it. There's some different things we've done, kind of taking a chapter, again, out of Coach Meyer's winging out when they used to defend off-ball cutters coming off screens and taking your help side wing and letting him switch to that cutter to take it away so you can still have help in the post. You know, maybe when we have a middle ball screen, we're going to rotate the lift man, the shake man. We're going to rotate him up to take that guy and let our guy that was helping on the screen recover now into a help position where he has the furthest guy away, the guy in the corner. So, I mean, it's just I think it really depends upon personnel. But to answer your question, what we've really tried to do is take the ball out of the equation, eliminate rotations as much as possible, and play.
Jim, talk about some falsehoods or false beliefs about pack line. You know, like I think shooting the three, you're going to be packed in there. But Virginia defends the three so well. Talk about some other things that people think but might not necessarily be true.
Yeah, I think there are some things that really stand out that I get asked often. You know, myths, if you will, of the pack line. One being that it's a soft defense, that you don't pressure the ball, that there's not any, you know, it's just easy to move and play against. And that could be the furthest thing from the truth. One of our reasons for wanting to run the pack line was because we want pressure on the basketball, but pressure on the ball is so hard to do in today's game because people are set up to beat pressure. They're set up to drive pressure. The game used to be east-west, and now it's north-south. So you've got to be able to keep the ball in front. That's hard to do. You know, it's hard to do. So how do we do it? We get up and we pressure the basketball. We've got four other guys that are positioned in gaps so that you don't have anywhere to go with it if you momentarily beat our guy. So that's the first thing. We are going to pressure the ball. I think good pack line teams do a great job with ball pressure. Obviously, you watch Virginia. I think they Coach Bennett Tony does an outstanding job of teaching ball pressure. If you go to one of their practices, you're going to hear that from start to finish. Pressure the ball, get up into the ball. You've got to have a presence on the ball. All things that we use as well. The second thing is getting to that 3-point shooter. You know, and a lot of guys think, okay, well, I want to go out and deny. Okay, go out and deny that wing, and now the ball drives at you. Organically, you're going to leave to give help. And so your momentum from leaving that denial position to going to the basketball, you've got to totally come to a stop and now change momentum to go back to the man you were guarding on a pass to him for a shot. So by virtue of our position is our help. We are already positioned in such a way that we're not having to move the help. We're in help. So rather than it being a two-step process, it's a one-step process. Rather than having to go help one and then recover, we've eliminated the help. We're already there. It's only recover. So conceivably, we're going to get to that shooter a lot quicker. And then for us scouting, the biggest parts of scouting come down to determining what individuals do. Are you a Steph Curry, Ray Allen, dead three kind of guy that we've got to chase you off the arc that we can't let you catch and shoot it? You know, are you a Kobe guy, a KD guy that can do both? You can shoot the three, you can put it on the floor and drive it. Or are you a Rondo guy? Are you a guy that can't shoot it that we can play off of? And so that dictates our closeouts. And so between that philosophy of your position being your help and understanding the closeout of who you're getting to, that's what allows us to get the threes. And I think your really good pack line teams are usually at the top, if not in the top three of your league, always in three-point field goal defensive play percentage. So that would be the second thing I would say that we get often as a common, you know, fallacy that you can't get to the three-point shooters. There's no pressure on the ball. It's a soft defense. And then the third one being that you allow teams to do whatever they want. No, we're not. And that's what I mentioned earlier in this conversation that I would get back to is initially my personality was one that I wanted to really dictate what you did offensively through my defense. And I felt the best way to do that was denial and pressure and switching and so forth. And as I became better at teaching pack, I understood quickly that we can still dictate what the offense gets. We're just doing it in a different way. We may not force you to turn the ball over, which frankly, guys, I think it's hard when you get to championship level play, when you're playing against the best teams in your league, when you're playing in the NCAA tournament, it's hard to turn teams over. Good teams don't turn the ball over. Good teams respect possessions and take care of the ball, and good teams search out great shots. So you better have a defense that's predicated on outlasting them. And so what we've tried to do, and I think the fallacy of the defense saying you don't dictate offense, you do, because what we can do is we can influence the type of shot you get. We're not going to give you layups, and we're not going to give you rhythm threes. We're going to make you take contested twos. You know, back in the day when I was at Eastern Michigan, we had a coach, and you guys will remember him, that was at Miami of Ohio, Charlie Coles. And Charlie Coles was a legend, man. He was just a great coach and one of the best pack line coaches that I've ever been around. And playing against his teams was like going to the dentist. You just couldn't get anything. There was nothing enjoyable. No possession was enjoyable. Everything was just a fist fight to the very end of the game. And that's who we want to be. That's who we try to replicate, is that kind of defensive approach.
And obviously you've done that, winning 600 games. Coach, before we run here, you're a master on the grill and the smoker. What tips do you have for those that are on the grill and the smoker?
Have fun. Have fun. That's my biggest tip. That's what I try to do when I'm smoking or grilling. You know, it's awesome to have your family around, to have your team around. That's one of the reasons I've been such a big fan of Traeger, because you don't have to do as much work. You know, I'm not throwing logs on the fire, so to speak. And I can spend more time with my guest as we're talking about what we're doing, as opposed to spending all the time working on the smoker or working on the grill. But let me tell you something. I have fallen in love with barbecue, and I'm a big fan of Texas brisket. I love North Carolina, both Eastern and Western style pulled pork, man. That's awesome. You know, so yeah, I just, that would be my biggest piece of advice. Have fun, enjoy it, and get an instant read thermometer, and that'll take away a lot of your losses and help you have more wins.
Solid advice. We only got to get to the tip of the iceberg here. So where can people follow you and find out more, Coach?
Well, first of all, thank you guys for the opportunity to be here. It's such an honor. I'm humbled to be a part of what you guys do. You guys do such an awesome job of sharing our game with people, and I love that. I grew up doing that, and I was very fortunate that people like, you know, Don Meyer and Rick Majerus and Bob Knight and Jeff Van Gundy, and you just go down the list. That's the culture I grew up in, that we share the game and we work to make the game better. So, yeah, guys can find – we have a website, CoachJimBoone.com. It's just CoachJimBoone.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at CoachJimBoone, and we try to put as much out there as we can to help coaches. And anytime anybody has a question about anything, I always give my cell number. If I don't answer, text me and I'll call you right back. 479-755-7349. 479-755-7349. You can email me at jim.boone@greensboro.edu. I'm always here to help coaches. Love talking ball. Love hearing you guys talk ball. I come away, Sam, some of your terminology was above my vocabulary. I've definitely increased my intelligence and my vocabulary listening to you guys. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. You're the first person that's told me that, so I appreciate that.
First and last, but he's gonna soak on that one for a little bit. That was a great
time. Well, I'm from West Virginia, so there you go.
Hey, Coach, first of all, thanks for all that you do for the game. I'm such a great giver to the game. I promise you, you will enjoy the follow of Coach and learning from him more. So go make sure that you do that or give him a phone call. Gosh, we just got his phone number, so give him a phone call. But, Coach, best of luck on this new journey, new team. There's no doubt that you're going to win. That's what you always do. And we just appreciate all you do for players and helping coaches as well across the country and across the world. Keep up the great work. He is Sam. I am TJ. We're the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of The Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Instagram @Hardwood_Hustle to stay up to date on the latest episodes and share your thoughts with our coaching community. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.